every day. And you can be part of this battle too.
Visit standuptocancer.org to learn more.
Together, we can save lives.
Susan McGraw here. Join me every Friday from 1 until 2 p.m. right here on WHFR Radio for the WHFR Journal. It's our local news and views, information, and interview talk show where we shed a light on local happenings, things in our own community and our campus community as well. We hope you'll join us Fridays 1 until 2 p.m. on the WHFR Journal.
And that program comes up next here on 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to this edition of the WHFR Journal. Today is the 16th of May, and it's hard to believe it was just, I don't know, March, and now it's the middle of May. We are looking forward to some really interesting discussions on today's show. Susan McGraw with you, host of the Journal, and a pleasure to have you joining us here on WHFR 89.3 FM, or if you're listening on the web at WHFR.FM. Either way, we're so glad you're here. So thankful for beautiful weather this past Saturday, by the way. We had a wonderful two, actually, commencement ceremonies for all of our Henry Ford College graduates. It was just a wonderful day. We had just tremendous guest speakers. Our own Governor Whitmer was our morning session speaker. She called out WHFR, which was super cool. So we love that. Spread the word. But most importantly, this sort of solidifies the reason why we're here at WHFR Radio. And our Board of Trustees knows that and is supportive of us for that reason and the support that we provide to the community. But we're here for student success. We're here to help students learn about broadcast and also ultimately create a new generation of ethical, honest, and quality journalists and DJs. And that's what we do best. And in this hour, I think we're going to feel that positivity come through. So congratulations to our graduates. And let's jump in to our first discussion today. It's Pawcella 2025. I just saw Coachella 2025. It was weird as usual. Pawcella, not so weird. Pretty darn cool, actually. And this event takes place June 7th and 8th. And WHFR will be participating. And we love doing so, but we don't have all the information. We don't have all the answers, but we know who does. So we've hooked up with Corey Keller, who is the president and CEO of Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit. And Corey, welcome back to our airwaves. It does feel like it's been a really long time since we've talked last.
Yeah. Hi, Susan. Yeah. Thanks for having me back. Yeah. I don't know where the months are going, but I'm glad that we have warmer weather for sure.
No doubt about it. An event like this, certainly, well, rain or shine, it's going to happen. We know that, mm-hmm. but it's even more fun in the shine. So, yes. So we're looking forward to it. For those that have never heard of Pawcella, maybe never even heard of Coachella, tell us first of all a little bit about this interesting name and sort of what it's all about. It's quite groovy, and if you go to the Friends for Animals website, which is metrodetroitanimals.org, you will see that groovy logo for this specific event and. We have so many wonderful people to thank for organizing it, but tell us a little bit about what this means to your group.
Yeah, so we this is actually our second year of putting on Pawcella, so it is sort of a take on Coachella, but as you said, much more cooler. It's really evolving around animals and community and the pack that we have and the collaboration that we have with each other. And so, it's basically, it's a street festival essentially, and it is wrapped around music. And we have this year it's definitely bigger and better. We have 8 musical acts, for each day. There's games, activities for humans and also for your pups. So we have some really cool, like, athletic dogs that are going to be coming in that are going to be doing demonstrations like duck diving and fly ball. So there's a bunch of various things to do, but it's really wrapped around this idea of bringing people and their pets together and having a blast and having lots of fun while at the same time helping a lot of homeless animals in need.
It sounds like a win-win, I'll tell you, all the way around. Well, we love music here at WHFR, and we also love animals. So just a natural connection for us and your wonderful organization in this spectacular event. So looking forward to seeing some of the add-ons and the sort of different things this time around. We have a little bit of time, so we're sort of having this interview a little early in the season. We know that the event is, again, not until that first full weekend in June, but we wanted to sort of get this on people's radar. I mean, graduation parties and, you know, celebrations and birthdays, and there's a lot going on in travel. So we know people are sort of marking their calendars for their summer events. So why should they put this one on their calendar?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, and that's just exactly it. Everyone's so busy. And so one of the things that we wanted to ensure was that we provided enough flexibility, because we want people to come out and just take a break from their everyday life and just enjoy some sunshine, because we're going to say that we're going to have sunshine that weekend. And just kind of like take a break and have some fun with your pup. If you have a dog, if you don't, just supporting a very grassroots organization that's helping over 2,500 stray animals every single year, and giving back in some capacity there. And just kind of just being a part of this whole, like I said, and I keep on bringing it up, it's very much a community-centric event, because we really want to be, we really want this event to be something that is, all-inclusive of everyone, people, pets. It doesn't matter if you don't have pets. We're actually going to be doing, we did it last year, but we're doing it both days this year, which is another adopt-a-thon. So if you're looking to adopt, that weekend's going to be a great opportunity to see what's out there, not only for the animals that we'll have up for adoption, but we're also bringing out other shelters or rescues in the Metro Detroit area are actually going to be coming in as well and bringing some of their adoptable animals.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. I think I shared my story. Our sweet Mackinac is a rescue from many, many years ago. And our son just decided that he was ready for a pet, and he's in an apartment. So he decided on a cat. And so now I'm a cat grandma, which I never thought I would say those words, but it's super, super wonderful. And of course, the first place I suggested he go was the wonderful, your wonderful facility. And, the Marianne Wright Animal Adoption and Education Center did not disappoint. Let's put it that way. Little Freddie found my Johnny, and they are fast friends forever now. So that's just one, story of so many that we hear and so many that have yet to be written. And the other thing that we often say in this arena sort of is, you don't find the pet finds you. So you might come to this event not necessarily expecting to bring home a furry friend. And, love connections happen, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you never know. But yeah, it's definitely going to be a really wonderful time. And again, I think we're kind of, we have something for everyone. It's in a way like you're going to get something back as well, because you just see all the, that's why we kind of went the theme this year of more of a like peace, love sort of vibe. Because it's really all about that. So we're really excited to put on the second year of Pachella and just continue to grow it and just keep on, letting everyone know that it's there and that we're here for them.
Yeah, we need peace and love always. It kind of feels like now more than ever, I'll tell you. Yes. So we register for this event as a participant, but what, and we'll get to that in just a moment, what about registering or reaching out to be a sponsor or a business partner? We've got some time, so tell us about options available for that.
Yeah, we have all kind of different options. And so we're basically, we're taking, you know, if there's a business out there that's interested in participating, we have what we call a vendor row. And so it's various different vendors with various different backgrounds. You know, some are selling, you know, pet toys and treats and things of that nature. You know, others might have crafts and things of that, or they're just supporting and promoting their business because they're a business in the community. So we still have plenty of time for that. You could still register today. And we're taking businesses or exhibitors through the end of May. So May 30th is the last day you can register to be an exhibitor. And you can go to our website, and I'm sure, Susan, you'll put it up, blast it out all over the place, but you can either go to metrodetroitanimals.org or, which is really easy to remember, Pachella2025.org. And the information is all on there on how to register. All nonprofits, if they want to be an exhibitor, we're waiving fees. So we just want you to be here and be a part of the community.
Nice. We love that. Again, Corey Keller is the president and CEO of Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, and we are talking about Pachella 2025. The peace and love, again, that logo is super cute. It's very very sort of 60s vibey with the peace signs and so on.
Yes.
I really like that.
Woodstock, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I'm seeing something about the pack walk, and I know that in other, you know, some nonprofit organizations, they have people that are participating sort of get people to sponsor them to be at an event or walk in an event. Sounds like you've got something like that going on. Tell us how that works.
Yeah, it's very similar. So Pachella has evolved from what we used to call this particular event as Mutt Strut. And with Mutt Strut, it was a 1 mile walk. And last year we didn't do it, but this year we've really felt the need to bring it back because, again, kind of that community need, bringing everybody together. So instead of calling it a Mutt Strut, we're calling it a pack walk. And it's a 1 mile pack walk. And we really want everybody to come out with their dogs. Like, bring out your dog. We're going to kind of like station everybody out. We're all going to walk this 1 mile together and kind of just solidarity of being, you know, pet owners and our love for our animals. But you can certainly, you can register if you just want to register and just say, hey, I just want to give you the $5. And then come on out. It's the pack walk's going to happen on Saturday, June 7th. We'll start lining up around 9 a.m. And then we'll probably start walking the course around 9:30. And so, you know, you could certainly do that. And then on Sunday, because of course we have to have an activity for each day for everyone. Sunday, actually, we're going to be doing yoga in the dog park because we have a dog park right next to us. That we'll be utilizing for all of our canine games this year. And so you can come on out. This one is without your dog, but that's also going to be at 9 a.m. And it's just kind of, again, kind of chill, the vibey situation where you can just come on out, do a yoga session. You can register for that on our website as well, just so that we have a number of, we know how many people are actually going to be coming. But all that information, again, is on Pachella2025.org. But yeah, I mean, we're really excited for the pack walk because we really want this to be a really big thing that shows a really large presence and just show like how many dog lovers there are out in the community. And if you don't have a dog, that's okay. You can still walk with us. So, and we're going to actually be bringing out a lot of our shelter dogs that are up for adoption. They're going to participate too. They're going to have adopt me vests on. So it should be a really good time.
That sounds great. We have so much music, and what we love about it is the fact that it's Metro Detroit bands, and it's a lot of stuff from the area, which we absolutely love, of course. So really, for just $5, a basic fee to one of the days of the festival, you get live music, you get opportunities to connect with vendors, maybe have a little outing for your pet if you have a dog and you want to bring them. You don't have to, of course. And there's good, I remember from last year, there's free freebies that the different, you know, people mm-hmm. give out and so on. And just a really just a tremendous day. And again, lots of fun little pet events as well for the dogs. And you even have like a, tell me that this cornhole tournament is for humans and not our four-legged friends, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. We had them last year and it was such a success and people love it. So they're coming back out again. So yes, we'll be doing a cornhole tournament within the festival as well. All that information too is located with a live link that people can go to register their team. But yeah, there's a lot of activities that we're doing this year. You know, we're bringing back face painting again. So there's a lot of things for kids as well. We actually are also going to have a couple of psychics here. So if you want to get your reading done, they will be around. We have another rolling magician this year as well. You know, if you do have a dog, you can test your dog's agility. So they'll be doing time trials and there'll be awards for those. So just a lot of fun this year, lots of fun.
Pawchella 2025, June 7th and 8th, and it is at the location of the Marianne Wright Adoption Center, of course. And we'll give specific information about exactly how to find the event physically, as well as, again, metrodetroitanimals.org, or just search Pawchella 2025 and you'll find it that way. So we just love the new facilities, Corey, and I know that it's kind of getting bigger and better, which is amazing. Many of us remember, especially those of us at WHFR, 40 years we've been broadcasting now this year. And we remember, of course, the Dearborn Animal Shelter. And now this whole new, entity is just tremendous. So tell us about what you have at the Marianne Wright Center and where to find it.
So we are actually just finalized. Like, we have just finished our construction on the last phase of our expansion. So we'll be opening that up relatively soon. We're going to be doing a grand celebration in July as well. Again, open to the community, but those that attend Pawchella will actually get to see the brand new facility. We're essentially, for those that have known Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit as the Dearborn Animal Shelter, very tiny, basically what if you were to Google Dog Warden or Dog Pound, that's what we look like. And now we're this super colorful facility that just, kind of shines like hope and, compassion. And we're now almost 20,000 square feet. It's a state-of-the-art facility. Bright lights, amazing ventilation systems for the humans and for the animals that come in. We have a separate animal services area now. We have everything from a pet food pantry to at least 4 no-cost vaccine clinics a year for Dearborn and Detroit residents. We have, of course, as we mentioned, adoptable animals as well. We see over 2,500 stray animals every single year just from the community of Dearborn. And because of our growth, which is wonderful, we are also trying to help other shelters and organizations and rescues in need as well. And so, when we do have space and we do have the capacity to help more or to partner more, we do. And any chance we get to be able to collaborate with other organizations like Feline Fund and Dog Aid, Michigan Humane, and others, we absolutely do, because we just feel there's a need in our community to give back as much as possible.
Yeah, well, and Pawchella 2025 is certainly doing just that. If for whatever reason you cannot attend this event because you've already made those plans or you have to go out of town or whatever the case may be, the center is vibrant all the time, of course, as Corey mentioned. And do check out the website for other opportunities, other events, ways to get involved as a volunteer, mm-hmm. Some resources that you might need, or again, if you're just looking for that that new forever friend. I love that Pacella is going to be bigger and better than ever this year. That's fantastic. And I also love the concept of really knowing that by supporting, by buying that ticket, kids 12 and under are free, frankly, pets are free. So it's really nothing for all of the, you know, there's a lot of bang for the buck there, not to mention opportunities to get the t-shirt, you know, to get the tote bag, all sorts of different things as well. And those are collector's items, by the way. But knowing that this participation, not only physically, but also that financial support really helps, you know, rescue and heal and just provide, you know, opportunities for these wonderful, wonderful pets that deserve all of those great things. And I think the concept of second chances, which is in a lot of your promotional materials, just says it all. So we'll let you wrap it up, Corey, to share your final thoughts on the event. But speak to that whole second chances thing. Don't we all need and deserve a second chance once in a while?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think we all kind of, I think this is why, you know, as you know, people too, we see that in animals, especially animals that are in shelters. You know, we all deserve a second chance and a better chance at life. And I think as an organization, we do that. And it's why it's always about, again, community support and working together to really try to solve the problem of homeless animals in this country. So, you know, certainly we're a small drop in the pond, but when we all work together, you know, we can actually make a huge difference. And this is what Pacella is about. It's about all working together. You know, again, as you said, like it's a $5 admission, which helps animals in need. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And so, and we want to show our support of our community by being able to say, yeah, come out. It's just $5, you know, your kids, you know, kids are free, you know, your pups are free. Just come and enjoy some time, get to know us if you don't know who we are as an organization. And you know, we are looking for volunteers and we're always looking for fosters. And we're really excited and very proud to show the new facility that we have, because not everybody gets that opportunity, and we did. And so we were very grateful for that. But now we have, knowing that now we have the physical facility to do the work that we need, you know, we need all this other support to be able to sustain it and to be able to grow programs and create new programs to really support a community that needs other services.
Yeah. Well, Corey, thank you as well for leading this cause, and congratulations on having such wonderful people on your team and providing this opportunity for this community to get together and celebrate all the successes and also make a positive impact on not only our own future, but also the future of the community and of course, our wonderful animals. We will be there, WHFR, of course, with our broadcast tent, talking to some new pet owners, as well as maybe even some pets. Last year, I interviewed the cutest little dog who ate the top of my microphone, but apparently it wasn't tasty because he spit it right out, but that was okay. So that's I'm going to remember that for this time, but really super fun. And again, bring your pet, put on your tie-dye if appropriate, if you have it, and let's celebrate this wonderful Pacella 2025. Corey, thanks again for your time. We still look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you so much, Susan. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, all the best. We have more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Coming up next, we're going to talk about May. Interestingly enough, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and boy, I can't think of a better form of therapy than petting my little Mackinac. So keep that in mind. We'll be right back.
This is John Stossel. Anything that makes it harder for you to speak limits your life. So if stuttering affects you or your child or someone you know, you can call the Stuttering Foundation for help. The number is 800-992-9392. That's toll free, 800-992-9392. Or you can visit their website, www.stutteringhelp.org. They can refer you to expert help in your state.
Next on the Journal Show here on WHFR, we're going to share some insight from a public radio exchange program entitled No Small Endeavor. This one is called Mental Health Awareness Month Special, a toolkit for mental well-being. In stressful times, what if the key to mental and emotional well-being was not a mystery, but a set of daily accessible practices that you could start today? Well, this show is going to address just that. We'll hear what some of the top psychologists and researchers say about how small practices like self-compassion, relationship building, and mindfulness actually can create outsized impact on mental, emotional, and even physical health. So this is a piece that was added to the public radio exchange just a couple of weeks ago, and we are going to shine a spotlight on mental health awareness as we are here in mid-May.
I'm Lee C. Camp. This is No Small Endeavor, exploring what it means to live a good life. Since 2020, we've been interviewing psychologists, therapists, philosophers, theologians, scientists, poets, and more, all to explore what it means to live a good life. Alternatively put, we're asking questions about human flourishing. How do we move beyond mere survival or subsistence to some sort of thriving, some sense of purpose, meaning, connection, possibly even joy? Today, we compile for you some of the common themes and practices we've seen repeatedly rise to the top, and in particular, we'll attend to psychological and mental well-being, with our attention given to practices often enjoined by numerous religious and wisdom traditions, while also being commended by evidence-based scientific research. Take the example of Dr. Keltner, who's a professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, and the faculty director of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center. He suggests a threefold outline for thinking about practices for human flourishing.
I look at the field of well-being, and there are different theoretical frameworks. I really reduce it to a few things. One is just these deep intuitions that so many contemplative traditions like Taoism, Buddhism, Romanticism taught us to go in search of: compassion, awe, gratitude, a sense of wonder. The second is sociality, is just cultivate an ethics of connection and a sense of cooperation with people, of friendship, of common cause. 40% of Americans feel lonely right now. They don't have enough connection. And so there are actionable ways to do that. And then the third is, how do you handle stress? How do you practice meditation techniques and tell stories? And how can we make sense of it? How can we grow out of it? And it's really dynamic. It's all the approaches don't work for everybody. You got to find your particular menu in a way to go after meaning.
Today, we'll give you a good number of options to try on your particular menu. And for our organization in this episode, we'll follow Docker's three main categories of well-being. One, the human intuitions embraced by a great variety of traditions. Two, sociability, connection, friendship. And three, how we respond to stress. Again, with endorsements for each of these categories of practices from scientific research. So for that first category of finding well-being in our deep human intuitions, we'll let Docker share with us the surprising positive effects that come from experiencing one particular emotion.
Awe is the feeling we have when we encounter vast, mysterious things. It's so good for you. Brief doses of awe help your heart, your immune system. You know, they help your stress. They help your reasoning. You become a sharper reasoner. They help you with your relationships, experiences of awe.
So give us kind of a big picture of some of the main things that you've learned in the study of awe.
First thing is, we feel awe in response to what I call the eight wonders of life, which is the moral beauty of people, nature, collective moving in unison or effervescence, art, music, spiritual contemplation, and then big ideas, right? Like God, you know, quantum physics. And then, really interestingly, life and death, you know, the cycle of life.
Let's dig in just briefly and expound just a bit more on kind of the health and well-being fruit of experiencing awe.
I'll start with two findings recently from our lab. You know, we took veterans out rafting, awesome trip for a day. And what we find is, a week later, because of awe through this rafting, they have a 32% drop in PTSD, which is a very hard condition. just recently we published a paper where, you know, medical doctors, nurses, during the peak pandemic chaos in the hospitals, 30% understaffed, a million people dying without their families. You know, I did a lot of work with healthcare providers, and it was like combat. And we just had them find a moment of awe each day, you know, just like pause, open your mind to something big that you're part of, just reflect on it, breathe. And they had reductions in depression and anxiety and loneliness over 30 days, right? So that tells us just a minute or two of this is good for us. In the body, we know awe activates the vagus nerve, which is this large bundle of nerves in your body, slows your heart, helps you vocalize, helps you orient to people, helps you connect, right? Awe activates that. Awe reduces inflammation. You know, this work that your immune system does, it heats up your body to kill pathogens. If you're chronically inflamed, it is so hard on your body, right? And awe cools down the inflammation response at a chronic level. So that just tells us, man, it's good for your body. And then, you know, I think the big story psychologically, awe takes us out of the self. It quiets down the self, even at the neurological level. And it prompts you to think, like, what am I part of that's bigger than me? That spiritual systems have done a good job of getting us to think about. But awe does this as well. Like, wow, I'm moved by this music. Why? Like, what themes of life does this speak to me about? And awe does that work for us in the moment.
So let me ask about this. And you talk about these, I think it was 8 ways that people experience awe. I was especially moved by your description of the way in which our observation of moral beauty can move us towards awe, that seeing other people's courage, kindness, strength, or their overcoming can move us towards that. What are ways that you have seen that either personally, or what are ways that you saw that in your, have seen that in your research?
Oh my goodness. You know, the finding on moral beauty caught us off guard in the lab. We studied 26 countries. We asked people to write stories of awe, just their own experience, not a scientist telling them what to say, but their own experience in countries from Mexico to India. And, you know, I was expecting nature and spirituality, and in came the findings that what we called moral beauty, you know, that other people's everyday people, how they give, how they sacrifice, how they stand up to abuses of power, how they risk their lives courageously, how they overcome obstacles. I remember this incredible story of a son writing about his dad, and his dad grew up in poverty. Parents died young. He married this wonderful woman. They had a bunch of kids. She died young. He worked until he was 90 just to get all the kids to a stable life. And the son was at his birthday party for the dad, and he just was blown away by his dad's sacrifice. We know that it's one of the deepest ways in which we can find the meaningful life is to surround ourselves with other people's moral beauty, to read about it, read about Gandhi, to look for it in the streets and you see how kind young kids are, to think about your mentors in life or even a spiritual figure. What that does is it leads us through this pattern of awe of like, man, like this is what I really care about. Then it moves my body. It moves my mind to think about ways to emulate the virtuous acts I've seen. Once that finding started to come in, I started to think, and I hope our audience is, about where do I find my experiences of moral beauty? And for me, in part, it was this work I did in prisons through restorative justice. I'd be inside the prison with 180 prisoners, just me and a handful of volunteers. We're there all day. These are guys who've had the hardest lives. You know, many of them have killed people. And watching them try to seek forgiveness and redemption and better their lives and the humanity of it all, every time I was in there, I was just filled with tears and goosebumps. And I was like, why is that? What is this? You know? And it was moral beauty, just the urge for these prisoners to overcome their past and seek forgiveness. So that's one example. And suddenly, you know, it's a great exercise to think about, where else have I found this? How have I found this in literature? You know, when I first read The Brothers Karamazov and I encountered Alyosha, it was my first encounter with a saint in a way. So, you know, it's a great exercise for us all personally to think about, where do we get moved to tears by other people.
Any closing encouragement or exposition on a bit more on cultivating everyday forms of awe for us?
Yeah, you know, I wrote this book when I was grieving the loss of my younger brother, which was a devastating experience. I was knocked off the rails. And as I write in the book, I was like, God, I do this science of awe, I'm going to go find it. And it changed my life. And finding it is just take a moment every day, slow it down, put away your usual labels and expectations and observe and breathe and be open to big, vast things, you know, and you can do that. You know, I'm looking at a cactus right now and feeling it. You can look at the sky, listen to music, look at somebody's eyes, you know, watch children play, whatever it is. Just the awe mindset's about slowing down, quieting the voice of the self and opening up to think about those systems you're part of, or however you define it. And then the second thing is, you know, those eight wonders are great ways we can find it. Music, nature, spiritual practice, prayer, big ideas, looking at visual things, and just make it part of your day for a few minutes, and it changed my life. So I hope our listeners will take a look at it and think about moments of awe for their lives.
Often after conducting an interview for the show, I find myself trying out new practices, which our guests recommend. One quite helpful practice in recent years is a self-compassion exercise, which I learned from Kristen Neff. Kristen is a pioneer in the field of self-compassion research. As you'll hear her discuss, self-compassion exercises have measurable impacts, increasing happiness and decreasing depression. Conventional wisdom has it that human flourishing requires heavy doses of high self-esteem. But Kristen is a vocal critic of the cult of self-esteem, saying that the biggest problem with self-esteem is that it tends to be contingent, she says, that an undue focus upon self-esteem can lead us to only feeling good about ourselves when we succeed. Instead, her research points to the alternative that is not contingent on success, namely self-compassion.
Self-compassion, it's also a sense of self-worth, but it's not a judgment or an evaluation that one is good versus bad. It's simply compassion, concern with the alleviation of suffering. It's just caring about yourself, right? Your sense of worth comes from the fact that you're a human being like all other human beings, as precious as any other. And so self-compassion is really about supporting oneself, being there for oneself when times are difficult. And by the way, because it's compassion, is particular to the context of suffering. Actually, in the Latin, passion means to suffer, come means with. So it's a way of being with yourself in times of suffering, whether that's because you failed or made a mistake or feeling inadequate in some way, or something like the pandemic, or you know, you have a health condition or something's going on in your life that's very difficult. It's a way of relating to yourself in times of suffering with kindness, care, and connection. It's not self-pity. It's not like, woe is me. It's just recognizing, hey, you know, life is difficult for everyone. I'm a human being like all other human beings. And the research is just phenomenally powerful in terms of showing that if you can relate to your difficulties with compassion as opposed to harsh judgment or shame or feelings of isolation, it makes us much stronger and healthier mentally and physically, actually.
You've talked about at least three different components of self-compassion, and one being just kind of kindness to ourselves. So could you tell us a little bit more about that one?
You might say the emotional tone of compassion is one of warmth and kindness, right? As opposed to being harsh or judgmental, the way actually most of us are. Most of us tend not to be kind to ourselves, especially when we've made a mistake. So just as compassion for a friend means you're kind and warm and supportive to that friend, we're also kind and warm and supportive to ourselves. But it's more than kindness alone. The reason it's compassion and not just kindness, the reason I didn't just call it self-kindness, is because there's two other elements. One is actually mindfulness. So I actually learned about self-compassion as part of my mindfulness meditation practice. That's where I learned about it. In the Buddhist tradition, it makes absolutely no sense to be compassionate to others, but not yourself, because of course the self and the other are interconnected, right? In order to give ourselves compassion for suffering, we need to be able to be present with it. In other words, if we ignored it, if we pretend it's not there, or we just stiff upper lip it, or on the other hand, if we're lost in it, if we have no perspective, we're just like wallowing in it, they actually can't have compassion. And so mindfulness, the awareness of, wow, I'm really having a hard time right now. Is there anything I can do to help? In order to ask that question, we actually need to have some mindful awareness of our pain. That's really the first step. And so you're mindful of your pain. You're kind to yourself because it hurts, basically. And then really important, a sense of interconnectedness, of common humanity, I call it. So what's the difference between pity and compassion, right? So if I pity you, I'm looking down on you, I'm feeling sorry for you. Or if I'm involved in self-pity, I'm feeling sorry for myself. Pity is different than compassion. So compassion is like, hey, I've been there. There's an inherent sense of connectedness, of humanity in the experience. And the same thing with self-compassion. It's not poor me. It's really framing our experience in light of the shared human experience. Okay, everyone's imperfect. Everyone struggles. You know, some people struggle more than others. Yes, it doesn't deny that. But nonetheless, an intrinsic part of being human is the right to compassion, from this perspective anyway.
So to recap, Kristen says that the three elements of self-compassion are, first, mindfulness of your suffering. Second, responding to that suffering with kindness and warmth towards oneself. And third, exhibiting a sense of connectedness, a shared sense of humanity. That is, to express to yourself, hey, you're not alone in this. What you're feeling is common to what it means to be a human.
So, for instance, we know when we give ourselves compassion, we reduce cortisol and increase heart rate variability. So we're actually literally helping our bodies feel more safe. And that's, for instance, that's one of the reasons self-compassion is linked to more physical health, things like better immune function, because when your body's operating, feeling more safe, it actually functions better and you get sick less often. You sleep better also.
Can you talk a little bit more then about what the suggested interventions might be or suggested best practices to cultivate this? I mean, you've kind of pointed to some with mindfulness meditation, but what are other people saying, okay, I want to try this. What would be some first steps you might suggest?
So what's really been surprising in my research is that it's easier than I had imagined it would be for people to be self-compassionate. I mean, it's hard to get in the habit of it because we're used to being critical. But the thing is, we already know how to be compassionate. It's not like learning a new skill. We already know how to be compassionate to others. So we already have the template that's fully formed. We really just have to give ourselves permission to use these skills with ourselves. So what you can do is one very easy thing you do, and actually there's research showing that this helps to dismantle shame, is if you just bring in intentionally the three components of self-compassion. So in other words, you're mindful of the fact that you're hurting, that you're feeling emotional pain. It could also be physical pain. Right? This really hurts. It hurts to feel this way. I'm scared. I'm frightened. Or, you know, I feel horrible, whatever it is you're feeling. So validating that emotion with mindfulness, remembering that you aren't alone. And again, just reminding yourself, okay, there's nothing wrong with me feeling this way. You know, this is part of being human. I'm not alone. So just intentionally reminding yourself of your humanity. And then giving yourself some words of kindness. And a very easy thing to do is to think, well, what would I say to a good friend who is in the exact same situation I'm in? You know, what would I say to be kind and supportive to them? We already know that. And what tone of voice would I use? And then you just turn that inward and say the same thing with yourself.
A practical way to do this, Kristen advises, a letter writing exercise. Write yourself a letter daily for 7 days. Acknowledge the pain, stresses, strains that you're navigating. Affirm that it makes sense that these pains feel like a heavy load, and then say the kinds of encouraging things to myself that I would say to a friend who was working through similar difficulties. I find it easier myself to do this in the second person. So I begin the letter, "Dear Lee," and continue on speaking to myself as if I were talking to a friend, acknowledging the challenges, offering words of compassion and encouragement. It all sounds terribly woo-woo, but it's fascinating. It is incredibly helpful.
And there's research that shows, for instance, people who did that in the letter writing exercise once a day for 7 days, their happiness increased by 6 months and their depression decreased for 3 months. So 6 months more happiness, 3 months less depression. It's pretty powerful for writing a little letter to yourself every day.
Yeah, for just a one-week exercise.
One-week exercise once a day. So again, it's pretty powerful stuff and it's not rocket science.
You're listening to No Small Endeavor and our episode exploring insights and practices into psychological flourishing.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. If you're struggling with mental health, you should know that there are resources out there that can help. And it's okay to talk about it if you need to. One place to get started with information is loveyourmindtoday.org. Loveyourmindtoday.org offers a range of guides, instructions, and insights for dealing with difficult situations or getting through a tough time. If you're struggling with mental health, get the help you need, because most people out here really care. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to No Small Endeavor, exploring what it means to live a good life. I'm Lee C. Camp. If you're just joining us, we're exploring insights and practices into psychological flourishing. So far in this episode, we've covered two of the three areas which Dr. Keltner outlined as keys to human well-being. First, those perennial concerns of various religious and wisdom traditions towards compassion, forgiveness, empathy, love, and other perennial human intuitions. Second, sociability, or having warm and meaningful relationships. And now third, how we handle stress.
The official definition of stress is the perception that the thing that's happening exceeds your ability or resources to cope with it.
That's Judith Moskowitz, a social psychologist at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. More specifically, she studies the impact of positive emotion in the context of intensely difficult life circumstances.
In the context of stress, and you know, basically in the context of life, negative emotions are normal and expected. You don't want to deny or suppress your negative emotions. But even in the midst of really extreme stress, people can experience positive emotions. And these positive emotions and positive events seem to be helping them cope better with this extreme form of stress.
Judith learned just how positive emotions can affect stress in the mid-1990s.
What I was studying at the time was men caring for their partners with AIDS. So some of the most extreme stress you can imagine experiencing. So the men in our study were caring for a partner who was dying, and then we also continued to interview them after the death of the partner. So the stress of caregiving and the stress of bereavement. And initially we were asking questions about that stress. So asking them what was stressful about caring for your partner or bereavement in the past week, what was a stressful event that happened for you, and then how did you cope with it? And shortly after the start of the study, the participants said, well, you're not asking us about the good things that are happening in our lives. And we were shocked as stress and coping researchers because we were studying stress. But they convinced us. And so we added a question. We then asked about something positive and meaningful that happened in the past week that helped you get through a day. And in almost every single interview after that, even if their partner had just died, the participants were able to talk about something positive that happened. So it was a real eye-opener for us to see that even in the midst of really extreme stress, people can experience positive things and positive emotions. And these positive emotions and positive events seem to be helping them cope better with this extreme form of stress. So we put together a multi-component program and started testing that in various groups. Usually it was health-related stress, and now we've expanded into all kinds of life stress where we can look at whether practicing these skills is helpful in maintaining well. So we have usually 8 to 10 skills, and the idea behind it is that, you know, you don't have to do them all. We ask everyone to try each of the skills and see what works for them and then make that one a habit, right? So the skills include things like noticing positive events, which, especially when you're under stress, can be really hard. So you think about the caregivers that I talked about earlier in this sort of really extreme stressful situation. Those who were able to notice a positive event, a lovely sunset, a beautiful flower, a walk on the beach, a good meal for their partner, did better. So we try to help people realize that, you know, no matter how bleak things are, there's always something positive. And then related to that is savoring those events, or we sometimes call it amplifying or capitalizing on those events. And this is telling someone about it, or even thinking about it later on, or writing it in your journal, or putting it on social media so that you get that hit of positive emotion again. You know, go back and look at your vacation pictures for the good vacations, right? And savor that and be like, remember how great that vacation was. That's savoring. And that helps you re-experience that positive emotion again. The third skill we usually teach is gratitude, which, and again, you know, these skills overlap to some extent. So gratitude has a lot in common with noticing positive events. It's just more about being grateful for things that are or things that happened. Sometimes that has a spiritual component, but it doesn't have to. You can certainly be grateful to other people or just grateful that things happened. You may don't know the cause. There's a lot of work showing that just taking a moment, either, you know, daily or once a week, to think about things you're grateful for can have a huge impact on your, certainly your psychological well-being, but physical health as well.
The remaining components are reframing events, noticing your personal strengths, setting and working toward attainable goals, displaying acts of kindness, and the last, mindfulness. You can hear more commentary from Judith on these practices on our full episode with her, available at nosmallendeavor.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
It helps enhance the use of the other skills because people are more emotionally aware and more aware of the positive events going on in their life, more aware of what they're grateful for. So that mindfulness skill and that practice of being more mindful really helps enhance the use of the rest of the skills.
What Judith is saying here about mindfulness, we've heard echoed in many of our guests time and again. And of all the guests with whom we've discussed mindfulness, one of them particularly stands out as the most practical.
Mindfulness is a mental mode. It's a way of making the mind intrinsic to all of us. It has to do with presence-centered attention that is essentially without emotional reactivity or conceptualization.
That's Amishi Jha, Director of Contemplative Neuroscience and Professor of Psychology at the University of Miami, as well as the author of the national bestseller Peak Mind, which explores her research on how attention can be trained for optimal performance and well-being.
Attention is obviously very important and, as we mentioned, vulnerable. But training it, there's not an obvious path on how to train it and strengthen it. And people have been trying for a very long time on how to do that. And most of the approaches involve training it with some kind of repetition of attentionally demanding tasks. So you come in front of a computer screen, you do things that require attention. And the notion was that if you do that enough, you'll have stronger attention. It doesn't seem to be the case. What people get really good at after doing this long-term training is the task. But now if you give them a slightly different task, they're no better than if they had never been trained at all. So it's this problem of generalizability that attention training solutions have really failed on. And that's where we're seeing the biggest benefit with mindfulness. So the family of practices with mindfulness training are aiming to cultivate both of those things, better attention and better sort of, let's call it better focused attention and better receptive attention. And the notion is that if you practice these things over and over again, the intrinsic appearance of mindful moments will increase in your moment-to-moment lives. And the formal way to do this is to take time out of your regular life to do a dedicated practice. Usually we want to do something that we might call stillness practice. So one category is what we call focused attention practices. Those are practices in which we pick an anchor for our attention, something as simple as the sensations of breathing in this moment. So I call it the find your flashlight practice. Set the intention to put your flashlight on a particular sensory experience. You know, so coolness of air moving in and out of your nostrils, could be the feel of your feet on the ground. And that is going to be the goal for the formal practice. Keep the mind on that anchor. The second instruction of the focused attention practice is notice where the mind is moment by moment. And when you notice that the mind has wandered away from that anchoring object, return it back. So it's focusing, pointing that flashlight, noticing where the flashlight is, and then redirecting it back. And this is what I will often refer to as my military colleagues do, the mental push-up of mindfulness in three simple steps. And then we repeat over and over again. And we're, of course, not doing this for the purposes of just being Olympic level breath followers. I mean, who cares if you feel the sensations of the breath? But it's that when you cultivate the capacity to steady your mind and point your attention willfully to where you want it to be, notice where the mind is moment by moment to see if you're on track or not, and then willfully get your attention back on track, that is a strengthening of a system that can be very useful no matter what you're doing, having a conversation with somebody or in a meeting or whatever it is. You first do these focused attention practices to learn how to sort of steady your mind. But now, after you've done those for a while, you can move on to the river of thought practice, in which what you're doing is imagine yourself sitting on a giant boulder at the edge of a riverbank. And all of the mental content that arises is like the flowing of the river. And you are at this distance, allowing yourself to observe what is coming up and what is dissipating without holding on to any of it. And it's that distancing of yourself from the actual immersion in the content that can provide so much freedom in some sense, choice in what you do next. These are things we can do privately every day for a short period of time. Our research suggests as little as 12 minutes a day, and profoundly change the way we feel and our capacity to act effectively in the world. And I think that makes me very, very hopeful.
I'd like to end this episode back where we started, with the remarkable benefits of awe and wonder. Oliver Berkman is the author of the best-selling book 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. The 4,000 weeks in the title is an allusion to the general number of weeks in a typical lifespan and evokes a sobering humility regarding the transitory nature of our lives. But somewhat counterintuitively, Oliver maintains that trying to squeeze every drop of pleasure out of life or every ounce of productivity out of a day is not the key to flourishing. Instead, one of the things he points us to is how awe and wonder can lead toward a life of meaning. He puts it like this.
When I step out of the house where we're living now in the very, very beautiful part of the countryside, which has no light pollution, and see the stars, like then it's very easy to feel awe and wonder because it is this sort of extraordinary sight and an extraordinary environment to be a part of. But actually, there's nothing non-extraordinary about sitting on the subway or the grocery store. Like, what, from the perspective of the idea that any of this is at all, it's possible to be filled with astonishment by that. And I mentioned very briefly in the book an anecdote told to me by somebody else who lost a close friend sort of unexpectedly young and found himself asking, like, what his friend would have given to experience the things he was experiencing, even if those things were waiting in a long traffic jam or being on hold to an annoying customer service line or something. There's all these things that life is full of are sort of not pleasant in terms of their substance, but the fact that you are doing them and that death could take them away puts a different spin on it all.
In sum, pause often and therein to recollect the wonder of it all. What a wonder it is that I, you, we are alive at all. As a professor of ethics for more than 25 years, I've explored these kinds of questions around human flourishing with many students. And as host of No Small Endeavor, I've interviewed hundreds of people from diverse backgrounds, circumstances, and academic disciplines, also exploring such questions. All of which reminds me of that famed line from renowned philosopher Alistair MacIntyre, who said, "The good life for humankind is the life spent in seeking for the good life for humankind." It's the pursuit itself, the exploration itself, that is at the foundation of a good life. So let's keep trying on for size, new practices and possibilities. Let's keep exploring what it means to live a good life together. That seems to be the necessary start of the path itself toward human flourishing. You've been listening to No Small Endeavor and our exploration of the insight and practices we've learned over the last number of years about psychological flourishing and well-being. We gratefully acknowledge the support of Lilly Endowment Incorporated, a
private philanthropic foundation supporting the causes of community development, education, and religion. Our thanks to all the stellar team that makes this show possible: Christy Bragg, Jacob Lewis, Sophie Byard, Kate Hayes, Mary Evelyn Brown, Carriott Harmon, Jason Cheesley, Audrey Griffith, and Tim Lauer. Thanks for listening, and let's keep exploring what it means to live a good life together. No Small Endeavor is a production of PRX, Tokens Media LLC, and
Great Feeling Studio.
Hope you enjoyed today's show, No Small Endeavor, as we honor and shine a spotlight on May as Mental Health Awareness Month. Do note that three-digit number 988, which is sort of the partner to 911, if someone is having a mental health crisis, it is for mental health awareness as well as suicide prevention. So 988 is an important number to have on hand should you or someone you know need that support. Thanks again to Corey Keller of Pawcella fame, also the Marianne Wright Animal Adoption Center right here in Dearborn. It's Pawcella 2025, taking place Saturday and Sunday, the 7th and 8th of June, and we can't wait to see you there. If you do come, and we hope you will, stop by our WHFR broadcast booth and say hello. We will have, for the next 2 weeks here on the WHFR Journal, some special presentations from Public Radio Exchange, and then we'll be back live the 1st of June for celebrating all things Dearborn community and beyond. A special thank you once again to our wonderful graduates from Henry Ford College. Many thanks as well to Russ Cavalluna, our president, outgoing president, who is off to do some amazing things at Western Michigan University. We hope to have him in on a show not too long down the road. And incoming interim president, Ms. Lori Gonko, vice president here at HFC, and she'll be stepping in until Russ's official successor can be named. Lots of things going on, and we are so excited to have this opportunity to share these details with you, as well as opportunities that allow us to live our best lives. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Thank you for being here, and keep listening to WHFR Dearborn, where we are making waves.
I think you need a reset. Time to reflect on the week you've had and prepare for the rest of the week to come. A few hours to tune out and focus on calming the soul. If that sounds like your jam, tune in to Midweek Midnights every Wednesday from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. right here on WHFR Radio. Join me, your host, Radio K, in showcasing both new and old shoegaze, indie alternative, and dreamy ambient space music that takes over the airwaves, ready to drift you into your happy place. So tune in this Wednesday and hop on the Midweek Midnight spaceship. You won't want to miss your ride.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
Look through your children's eyes to see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating world.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.